And hello, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to the Way of the Truth Warrior. My name is David Whitehead. I'm very happy to be here. Here we are. Way of the Truth Warrior episode, one of my first episodes of the new year. I couldn't have thought of a better person to bring on than the one and only Johnny Enoch. Johnny's been a friend of mine for quite some time. He is a man after my own heart. He's a sincere investigator of truth. If you got together with him and had a little beer, and you started getting a good conversation going, which I've done recently, he would tell you that he's an ordinary man pursuing extraordinary knowledge. He's a practicing hypnotherapist. He's an occult and esoteric researcher. He's got all kinds of information out there. I've done interviews with him in the past, and he's just a wealth of information. He's an inspiring guy, and he's also Canadian, which is amazing. So, Johnny, welcome to the show for the, the first time? Welcome, man.
It is, but thanks so much for having me on, David. It's a great pleasure and an honor to be on the Way of the Truth Warrior. All the same things can be said about you, my friend.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Well, Johnny, it's 2019, and this world is a mix of crazy and a mix of amazing things and a mix of dark things. It's a time where a lot of things that were not known previously are starting to become known. It's a time where there's a huge debate about every subject, which I think is actually a good thing. I think it's good that when information is presented, people challenge it, they talk about it, they discuss it. Mm-hmm. Although I personally prefer that it's done in a rational, sane, calm manner. I don't know if that's a good way to describe what's happening right now with the political dialogue. But anyways, we're going to talk about a lot of different subjects here, and we're going to do it calmly and rationally. And I wanted to pick your brain about a number of things, because you and I have spoken off air, very recently. We speak regularly about the subjects we're interested in. You're constantly saying, hey, Dave, have you heard of this? Have you seen this? And I'm just like, wow. And it seems like you're covering a lot of the things that I honestly haven't had the time as of late to get into. And you were telling me a very interesting story about Canada and how you've been looking at this project. You've been working on this project of going out in the field and talking to various witnesses and people that are involved in something that is very similar to what you could hear about in a U.S. context, which is Area 51, and that Canada has its own secret installations where a bunch of secret shit goes on. So I'm going to let you introduce that. How did you get into that, and what's that all about?
Well, first of all, thanks for asking about it. And I know that you're well aware, and probably your listeners are well aware, of a lot of these famous cases in ufology that are based here in Canada. And of course, we go back to such cases as the Shag Harbor case, or over in Falcon Lake, up near Winnipeg, we have the story of Stefan Michalak. And around 1967, we have a lot of very famous UFO cases that happened here. And again, these are cases that have been well documented with the RCMP. There have been lots of witnesses. These are people that just would not exaggerate their story in any way. They're absolutely incredible when we look at them. Other cases, of course, in northern British Columbia that we find that are very important are the ones of such as Miriam Delicato. But, you know, we have even stranger activity going on here in Canada, especially here in British Columbia. This is probably the greatest hotspot that we can look at in ufology as far as Canada goes. Because again, as you mentioned, you know, when we think of underground bases, we think of ufology and all these things, we think of the southwestern United States, right? You know, we go over to Area 51 by Rachel, Nevada. We go over to Dulce, Los Alamos, all those sort of places. So, actually, before we get into the underground bases subject, one area that I'd like to bring up today that's very interesting that can get people talking is if you go and look up this place in British Columbia called Little Fork over by Clearwater. This was brought up to me over by Derek Whitesky Cloud, a friend of mine. There's a little town there that I would say is the equivalent of Canada's Roswell. And it's absolutely amazing because during the time of the 70s and 80s, there was so much ufology activity here, so much UFO activity with people getting abducted, seeing extraterrestrials and aliens and seeing ships come out of the lake that, and I believe the lake there is something, it's got a name like Gray Lake. It's connected to the Grays or something on those lines, which is interesting that this whole town when you drive into it, actually has a sign, a billboard on the outside of it that has extraterrestrials for this ice cream parlor. They had like a UFO museum there and everything was alien based, like you're driving out to Roswell, New Mexico. And the interesting part about this, David, is that after a while, you get municipalities that step in, you get people that say, hey, this stuff is scaring people off. Maybe it's not good for business. So I need everybody to tone down the aliens. I need you to remove it from your signs and to stop talking about it. Well, interestingly enough, recently in the news, we've seen there's that story, and I sent you a link over about it, that there is a cave that's been discovered here in British Columbia that there is a, there it is, a $1 million fine for entering into it. $1 million fine for entering into this cave. If you go into it and wherever that leads, they don't want you going there. And that's right over by, very nearby where this area is that we're discussing. So when we look at things like this and we look at the idea that we've been hearing about underground bases, you know, it certainly makes us think, are there underground passages? Are there bases? Have you heard the stories before, David, about the underground bases over in Nelson, British Columbia?
I have not. But here, let's do this, Johnny. All right. I have a wide demographic of people that tune into this show, and I speak about a variety of different subjects. So before we jump balls deep into the UFO subject, let's do a little bit of background and let's talk about this from a very research-based perspective, okay? Because the moment you bring this subject up, okay? Now, many of the people on that follow this channel, I've done a lot of stuff before. I've been on shows like Ancient Aliens, and you know, we talk about these things. Mm-hmm. And I think people just think, this is just a fun little interesting subject. And to some extent, it is. There's so much that we know, and there's so much that we don't know. But, you know, if you were to speak to a skeptical mind about this subject to say, well, why are you guys even spending any time on this? Like with all the stuff going on politically and all the wars and the poverty and the social conversation that's happening right now and the economy, why is this even important? And I would say, well, of course, we're obviously pursuing extraordinary knowledge and trying to get down to the root of who we are, why we're here, what's happened in the past, where did we come from, so that maybe we can analyze a little bit better where we're going. And I know, just like yourself, Johnny, I have always been interested in these mysteries, in these subjects of asking these questions. You know, are we alone in the universe? And I'm sure everybody right now can say, yeah, I don't think we're alone in the universe, but I don't think, maybe the argument for them is, I just don't think they're coming here. I don't think there's any interaction. I don't think the paranormal stuff has any validity. I think all these UFO cases are just misidentified weather balloons and flashing lights, and it's mass hysteria, and it's all psychological phenomena, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, what would you say, Johnny, to somebody that might be on the fence about this, to maybe give them a new perspective on this subject of extraterrestrial visitation and why there might be a secret governmentally about this?
Well, I would say, David, that there are a lot of things that we are not made aware of. There's a lot of scientific breakthroughs, a lot of technological breakthroughs. There are a lot of great concerns, actually, even on a level that we could look at around the world, that our governments and more are preparing for natural disasters. I don't know if you got recently the notice on your cell phone that there was an emergency test signal that was sent out on all the cell phones everywhere. That's not an accident. Our governments know about this. They're preparing for it, but they don't want to spread public pandemics and get people in a state of hysteria, nor do they want people worrying about it. But there's a variety of reasons why you'd want to compartmentalize things like this. And of course, there's great shows coming out about things like Project Blue Book that's out there, and the incredible work of our mutual friend Richard Dolan that has covered the history of ufology and why such a cover-up would potentially be there. But, you know, the idea of there being an underground network of bases makes a lot of sense. First of all, these are unpenetratable places. They're safe from natural disasters. We know there's a long history of them. They're called DUMs, or deep underground military bases, and they've been talked about by a lot of people. And most certainly what's very interesting is that another friend of ours that you and I have discussed before, Jordan Maxwell, when I've taken trips with him, road trips with him, you know, we visited places all over the United States. And one of the interesting places when I was visiting over by Area 51, out by Rachel, Nevada, which is known as S4. is that if you go to this little Mickey Mouse cafe there called the Little Alien Inn, and you go visit this place and you walk across the street, one of the things you'll notice is that if they tell you, you know, hey, put your telephone pole, put your ear up to the telephone pole and take a listen. That's what Jordan would tell me. And he'd say, what do you hear? And what you hear is you hear this rumbling underground, like it sounds like there's noise moving about like carts. And it's because it's been a well-known fact for a long time that there's an underground network, like an electric railway system that connects all these various bases that go all over the place. And we're talking about all kinds of technology and information sharing. But our story in Canada is a very, very important one, because actually there's a great book that came out that documented this. And I don't know if you can see this. It's called Genesis for the Space Race by John B. Leith. And if you've never heard of this, I recommend that everybody go check this book out and pick it up. In this book, Genesis for the Space Race, here's a guy, John B. Leith, who, you know, is essentially, he's born in the 30s. He's got a great background with military connections. He releases this book in the 1980s, and he gives all kinds of incredible information in there. He says there's a background story to the idea of going back into World War II when we were looking at a threat from the Germans. What the idea was is that then President of the United States, who is FDR, Franklin D. Roosevelt, is worried at the end of the 30s and going into the 40s about a threat of these round-wing craft, these round-wing aircraft coming from the Germans with the Hanabu and everything like that. So he then
Just to quickly add to that point, for people that might think, oh, the whole idea of Nazi UFOs is crazy, you should look into that. I was looking into that again very recently to refresh my memory on that subject. And if you go to people like Dr. Joseph Farrell, and there's so many other great people that to discuss what the actual projects were that the Nazis were working on and that many governments in the world have secretly been working on, that is a very, very interesting story. But go ahead.
You're absolutely right. And yeah, Joseph Farrell is incredible, the work that he's doing in this area as a historian and everything else. But going back into that story with FDR needed to have a place to study or reverse engineer these craft, these round wing craft at the time. So at the time, they broker a treaty with Canada, and they talked to then Prime Minister of Canada, who was Mackenzie King. And they say to him, according to what Leith has documented here, we need an underground area, an underground base, a fortress in Canada that happens to be located in British Columbia, that was built in the end of the 30s into the 1940s here. And it was put into a very much into a wilderness area that you couldn't get to. And in this base, the whole point of it was to reverse engineer these craft and to replicate UFOs. That was the whole point of this original intention of this project. Now, according to Leith, what happened is that during that time, we actually had an extraterrestrial exchange program where actual ET craft were eventually reverse engineered there. And David, I know you have been a pioneer on the forefront of disclosure. You have taken entire conferences across Canada, talking to people with some of the leading minds in disclosure. I mean, you are good friends with the former Canadian Defense Minister of Canada, the Honorable Paul Hellyer, who will tell people with a straight face the honest truth that we've had ETs on our military and government bases exchanging information with scientists. And those are what his contacts will tell him. And we've heard from the likes of Charles Hall. So we know that's been going on for some time. But here's the startling news that I discovered that was absolutely shocking, is that I started to do an investigation to see if I could find out where these underground bases were that John B. Leith was talking about. So I started talking to everyone from people with a military background. I started to talk to remote viewers, and that led me to working with Sebastian Martin. And Sebastian Martin not only is a researcher, investigator, but he's also done a lot of remote viewing work. And he started to remote view a lot of these sites. And what we discovered actually is that leading up into the areas of where you are over on Vancouver Island, it was incredible that some of these hubs that we see that move across the United States and other areas, there's an underground facility that has been alleged to be located over by Woodby Island, in the bases there. This was alleged to exist over by Emery Smith, who's a whistleblower that's been coming out with a lot of information. Going across there, he was even talking about it leading up into British Columbia. And from what we also found out from talking to geologists and others, that these underground bases and underground areas are actually existing in volcanic underground areas, a very ancient underground volcanic passageways that they've built these alongside, that almost, and this might sound a little crazy for your viewers, people who are listening to this for the first time, but this is very much like a UFO highway, a super highway that many of these places are even connected through to various mountainous areas, even into the oceanic underground impressions of these areas these go into. And it's absolutely fascinating, David, because as I mentioned to you when I stopped by last time and we sat down at the pub for a great visit, I mentioned to you, if you'll recall, that we got to visit through a very special invitation. We were visiting one of these underground installations.
So you were visiting the installation. So explain that. Like, how would you get access to that? How would you get even close to one of these places?
Well, as I mentioned, the interesting thing about working with Sebastian is that Sebastian has all sorts of connections from the work that he does. First of all, he's been a successful business person, but he's also an investigator, and he's done remote viewing work for a lot of interesting people, let's just say. So he gets interesting access to places. That's what I'll leave it at that. He tells me when we're in the middle of this investigation.
Just to pause, sorry, because we're going to explain this as we go, right? So the remote viewing concept, for people that might think, oh, it's just a bunch of, you know, jibber jabber, whatever, it's not valid. The government, the U.S. government, has invested millions, if not billions of dollars into research for this particular method of trying to seek out targets and gain information. And it's all about the human mind works. We're learning more about this through quantum physics and all these different things. Can you just quickly explain remote viewing for people that may have just tuned out over the last 40 years or so and didn't know about it?
Absolutely. Thanks, David. The remote viewing protocols that are used, and they're still used by the intelligence agencies, they were developed, as you can see, in the special projects that are connected to, like, say, DARPA's Stanford Research Institute and other areas that we find, let's say, that were shown in that movie, like Men Who Stare at Goats, that you see that these programs came along because the Russians were developing similar things, like that psychic discoveries behind the Russian Curtain book that came out. So America and of the militaries on this side had to say, okay, we need to develop our own psychic research projects. And you're absolutely right. There's no good explanation for why this works. It seems to be something on a quantum level, but when people tune into this, there are certain people that are more gifted at it than others, and they use these protocols. They can somehow view anything, you know, even outside of time and space. They can get a visual, auditorial, or kinetic connection to things, and they can actually recall it, or they can look at certain targets. It's not an exact science. I've been told that, you know, there is room for error. They'd have like a room full of five people sometimes remote viewing something, and they'll come very, very close with approximants. But what they're looking for is replicable data. So they'll see, okay, where are the data points that we can compare on certain things? But people have located all kinds of targets and objects and different military threats using these remote viewing protocols.
Yeah, that's a really good explanation. And actually, I was reading a book. I think it was Jim Mars. I first read this from, he reported on this, and what he was reporting was on the amount, like all the documentation that came out from these intelligence agencies, from the military, on their research into this program, and that they found it to be valid. So if they found it to be valid, then I think we can safely assume that doesn't mean everything when everybody comes out and says, hey, I'm remote viewing McDonald's in China, like right now, like doesn't mean that everybody's on the up and up or has all those protocols. I'll bet you that's where a lot of the research funding went in, was to how to narrow it down to finding patterns so that they can isolate it and then verify it and say, oh, there is this actual facility here, or there is this actual person, place, or thing. It's valid. It's kind of like when you research the psychics that work for detectives in police departments, and how for years and years and years, we've known that they do this. The police rely on this information. They've caught and convicted criminals based on this information. Is it 100%? No, but there's something there to it. And that's really, really interesting. And I recently did an interview on the Unslaved podcast with Anthony Peake. And I recommend people go and check out his work on this, because he's come at these kind of psychic and paranormal type phenomena from a very scientific perspective. So if you think this is all just woohoo, you got to get into the cutting edge of research on these things and realize that, hey, if it's good enough for the government to spend millions and millions of tax dollars to research this, and probably black budget dollars as well, and to actually make decisions based on the information gathered by remote viewers and psychics, et cetera, there's got to be something to it. Okay. So I just wanted to quantify that for people, just so that as we're telling this story, it's not sounding as far-fetched as people might think.
Yeah, people have no idea how close we are to that kind of future right now. I mean, Elon Musk is developing Neuralink brain implants that are going by the, the cerebral cortex, that are on a nano level, powering themselves off of bioelectrical signals on the body and being able to give us telepathy, access to quantum information. And China's even launching quantum satellites into space. So it's very soon that our satellites our cell phone technologies and everything like that are going to be obsolete. And this is more of our future, are going to be like a technological means, which has scary implications also, obviously.
Dude, that freaks the shit out of me, man. I'll tell you why. Just because, I mean, I'm scared enough as it is with the phones and what's happening. And, you know, here we are, we're going to go, yeah, we all want to be psychics. Well, let's put some nanobots in our cerebral cortex and see how that goes, and make sure that, you know, whoever has the control over the computers or supercomputers or whatever, I don't know if we can trust them. But anyways, it's just interesting that here we are in this age, we're developing all this technology. Some people even speculate that a lot of these advancements in technology came from the fact that we had help, you know, put that in quotes, yes, from something or somewhere. And, you know, I was just watching this documentary on, the whole, what's his name? The UFO whistleblower. This is the guy that kicked off all of the, all this stuff about Area 51. I mean, here we are talking about Area 51 in Canada. I'm not sure why my mind is drawn a blank. Bob Lazar, of course. Bob Lazar, you know, and I've had John Lear on my show years ago, by the way. But Bob Lazar, who is the most controversial character in ufology, and I think that's because he kind of spearheaded the whole UFO thing back when he came out with his interview. And this new documentary that has come out to show the real side of Bob Lazar, his family, his, you know, the background, the verifying, his all the claims that he's made, the fact that he's remained consistent for over 30 years without missing a beat, the fact that everybody close to him has verified that he's honest, he's taken multiple polygraph tests and passed with flying colors. Many of the things that he predicted and said have come out in classified and declassified documents and other eyewitness testimony. And what he revealed was that essentially, we're back engineering alien technology, as crazy and out there as that sounds. This has been one of the arguments in ufology that they've been trying to validate. It's been hard to find hard proof, but here we are. And it makes you wonder if they did get in some kind of communication with these advanced beings, or grab some of their technology or whatever, and started the process of back engineering that, what are the implications for history and where we find ourselves now if that is one of the truisms that brought us to this place, that not only are we not alone in the universe, but that there's actual money and black budget underground stuff going on to A, keep this from the public, and B, continually develop this technology. This is a huge thing to consider. So, here we are talking about a Canadian Area 51. I mean, maybe they're just testing out some planes. Maybe they're just testing out some bombs, although I don't know why Canada would be doing that kind of stuff. But, you know, maybe there's something bigger. Maybe there's an underground network globally that we don't know about. I mean, I did an interview years ago with an author, Richard Sauter, who's a PhD, and he was one of the first guys to do the most, I think, extensive research specifically on underground bases, these deep underground military bases. And he's got a book called Underwater and Underground Bases, Surprising Facts the Government Doesn't Want You to Know, and other books that he's written on the subject. And it's not as wackadoodle out there as you think. It's well documented that there's something like this going on. And so, you know, pulling this all together, Johnny, here we are in Canada. You're going to these, you're talking to people that have inside information. You're going to close to these facilities. I'm assuming you can't go in them, but like, what was your experience? How did you get there?
Well, actually, I got to go in and around one that's been deactivated, which was fascinating. It's still a very classified military site. There's all kinds of experimentation going on near there. There's kinds of commercial interests and some that have been leased out. So when we got to visit this one site on Vancouver Island, and just to give you a little bit of backstory, we know about all kinds of strange bases there with conspiracies connected to them over by Nanus Bay. There is strange stuff that's happened around Duncan. And one of the articles I sent you was about Granger Taylor. And this is a guy that's gone missing for, he's been missing for over 30 years. This was back in 1980. It was a guy that was fairly brilliant in the area, and Vice has covered articles about this guy. I hear there's a new documentary coming out about him. He claimed that he was in communication with extraterrestrials, and he was absolutely brilliant. He was a mechanical type. But, you know, critics have said, you know, this guy was also experimenting with LSD. But, you know, that should come of no surprise that people that are very brilliant have done stuff like that. Even Sir Francis Crick and whatnot is alleged to have experimented with that, who gave us DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid.
Your government has experimented with LSD. Your government has experimented with that. MK Ultra, exactly. Blah, blah, so many Operation, I don't know, Gladio or something. There's all these different operations that they have used to try to basically change the settings of the mind to access this information about all this quantum stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. No, this has been going on for a long time with the MK Ultra Manchurian Candidate stuff. So it's absolutely fascinating. So one of Sebastian's contacts had contacted him and said, listen, I know you're doing an investigation into this. If you get up tomorrow morning at about 5:30 or 6 a.m. or whatever it is, initially we had to get up. And I just happened to be out on the island, which was very interesting. It was strange timing. He said, I'll get you guys very exclusive access. You need to have some sort of a clearance to get in here. There's scientific experiments going on there right now, but this is an underground facility that was more operational by the 1960s. And what's very strange is, I'll give you a little backdrop about the place that we got to visit in an undisclosed area in, I want to say, the center of Vancouver Island. That's all I'll say. When we went to this place, there was a bank of satellites nearby in a very mountainous area that was up there, which was very, very strange. And it's still active to this day. So we go up into this place and we get clearance to go through all these gates, and we finally get to drive through. And when we were there, we were told that we were not allowed to videotape any license plates. We were not allowed to get any of the employees. We were able to get audio from one of the employees that works there. And the employees said that something strange has happened there for a long time. First of all, they said at night, they're almost afraid to be there because there's an underground humming sound underground. And there's things that almost come through the wall, like flashes of color, like a neutrino light source that's brushing up against the fabric of space-time. There's this all sorts of energetic anomalies, and you feel a deep sense of fear when you're at this place in the middle of the night. And they actually invited us to come back with night vision cameras and infrared technology to actually do an all-nighter there and to see what we would capture coming around this location. So what's strange is, if you look on my Twitter, if you were to scroll down my Twitter there, you're going to see some pictures of Sebastian and I visiting this one location. And if you just go down a little ways there, what you'll see is that we even found these portals. And there's a video link to, doing a brief video tour there of us. That's us outside of the satellite banks up in this mountainous area. And these are up near this underground base. This was a very real underground base managed by the Canadian military. There's the no trespassing sign. And what we found is actually there was portal holes. I think that's all there was for those ones on Twitter. But that was the no trespassing, one of the last and final gates we had to go through. There's these portal holes on the ground that we saw were sealed up. And as you'll see on the video intro we did, that there was a doorway that went under that's now sealed up with mesh and underground concrete that went into large underground areas where the scientists would go. In the satellite area where they're doing those installations, there's still underground tunnels and areas you can go to. So it gets even more bizarre from what we're told. We have interviewed scientists that used to work there something like 30, 40 years ago. There's a scientist that said that they were doing otherworldly experiments underground there. And in fact, there was also pizza delivery guys that were claimed to have brought something like 10 or more pizzas and had to go two stories under into an area with military guards to deliver these into this particular installation, which is very interesting that that was happening all those years ago.
We got to find these pizza delivery guys and have them on and just be like, dude, what did you see, man? You're like the luckiest pizza delivery guy ever. What kind of pizza did the aliens order, did you think?
That's it. We have to ask them. We have to find out what has been alleged and what sort of the remote viewing data suggests. And from who we've talked to is that there was potentially all sorts of things going on underground. The first explanation sounds, I'm sure that you can relate to this from your research, which is we were told there was MK Ultra experiments that were going on there. In fact, there's all kinds of things I won't go into right now about who was using the land after and the type of organizations that were supposed to be, working as child camps and stuff like that, which doesn't make any sense. But the other interesting thing that was going on there is that it's been suggested that there was some kind of a portal technology that existed underground, like Montauk. The building that is stationed there is built just like Montauk in Montauk, New York, where Preston Nichols and Peter Moon very famously documented in the Montauk experiments. The idea is that we'd have like a quantum access technology that you could look at various scenes, almost like a Philadelphia experiment, that you could look in different areas of history, backwards and front, or to go through. But what we've been kind of told is that something nasty potentially came through in this underground base and wiped everyone out, and that's why it was sealed up. In fact, the people that are taking care of the area now with the scientific experiments and the groups told us all the entrances of the underground bases and the areas. They showed us where they've been sealed up, and they've been sealed up on more than one ways to make it harder to access. But what's important here is that something is going on there still at night, and the people that work there swear to us, these are very solid individuals, they're swearing to us that there's some weird stuff that is happening at night, a humming sound underground that's freaking the hell out of them and things that they're seeing, and which leads us to believe that everything we've been told about otherworldly experiments and portals is real. Lastly, one of the things that we were also told by the geologists that are connected through this, also connected to mining, is that when the site was surveyed, there was black soil and underwater passageways, which is indicative of not only gold, heavily laden gold in the area and underwater passageways, but this is ideal, I've been told, for if you're running this type of portal technology and stuff like the German scientists were looking into. So
like the Nazi
we also
bell
believe
and all that.
Yes,
we also type of thing. Yeah.
We're connected into a very ancient underground passageways, just like in Victoria, British Columbia. There are underground tunnels all around these areas. People on YouTube have documented them under the city. There's an underground tunnel that was put there by Francis Rattenbury that was originally used by secret societies that goes under the Parliament buildings, even into the museum. There's underground passageways that have been well documented, even into the Empress Hotel.
Wow. Wow. And, you hear about these kind of underground passageways all the time. It makes me think of that movie, They Live, where the whole premise of this film, everybody should watch it. It's a funny one with, I can't remember the wrestler's name or whatever he was in it, but.
Yes, where he puts on the glasses and things
change. He puts on the glasses and everything changes. And then the whole thing ends up being that there's this race of beings that has come. They look like they're human, and they built this advanced underground network, and they have all these portals and gateways and things like that. And this kind of stuff it's always been in these goofy science fiction movies. And I think that's why if there's any truth to any of it, it's hard for the average person even to wrap their mind around, because we're used to watching this in a fantasy type of setting. And it just makes me think, like, when you put all, I've spoken to so many people, Johnny, and I know you have as well. I've been to some amazing places. I've had my own experiences, and I've tried to come at this type of stuff with a very rational scientific approach, where I'm not just jumping on everything. Oh, that's real. It's real. It's all true. I'm trying to actually find out what the truth is. And sometimes you have to entertain both the critic perspective and the full on, yeah, it's all true perspective. And you got to play with it and look at the evidence and then see what evidence has come out over the last how many years, collate it, talk to the brilliant researchers that have dedicated their lives to this stuff, all the authors, like I've had Richard Dolan and many other people on this show. And, you're trying to collate this stuff. We're literally like kids just sort of peering over the gate, trying to see what the adults are up to. And it's very, it's impossible to validate absolutely everything, but there's smoke, and where there's smoke, there's fire. There's something that's there. And so, if we think about the fact that here in Canada, whether it's they're hiding, you know, portals and gateways or UFOs or any of this kind of stuff, or whether there is just this secrecy going on, these secret networks and underground systems. It's a mystery, and it's an amazing mystery to explore and think about, because all it does is it shows that so much of the way that we view the world and the way we view our government and the way we view all of these different things is very limited. And it means there's more exploration to be done, that somebody on this planet knows the truth about this. And that it's like the old X-Files thing. The truth is out there. There's something going on. And for me, I think that so many of these things I've looked at, I can't validate each one, but I can definitely sit there and go, yeah, there's something, something's going on. Stop saying that it's crazy to look into this. There's something that's there that's real for us to explore. And it has probably profound implications for what it is to be human and all these big questions that we're all trying to answer.
Yes, absolutely. And what I want to point out, as you were talking about that we're validating these places, for me, it was incredible to go to this place. And as people can see on Twitter and on my YouTube channel, on Metaphysical Source, I did post video of us driving into this area, what it was like for us to walk around these areas, and people can get a very good idea of what an actual underground base looks like. And these are all connected. And I've been told there's all sorts of them. But actually, we get a few other very interesting clues about this, because as I mentioned, there are all kinds of stories there over by Duncan with a man that has been missing. He just vanished. I was alleged to have been in communication with extraterrestrials. He left a letter behind saying as such. And there's all sorts of other stories back in the 1960s and over by Lake Cowichan area, which has a lot of mysterious stuff connected to it, that there was underground tunnels where extraterrestrials were said to have had an underground healing hospital. There was a man talking about that was documented, as well as there have been lots of legends by the First Nations people there about the tall ones and mysterious people coming up from the earth and underground tunnels and a history with extraterrestrials or star beings. So these areas are quite ancient. And actually on Vancouver Island, we even have stories connected to the elongated skulls, whether it was artificial headbinding or not. There's a fascinating mythology there, but it goes bigger and outside of that. And as you mentioned, these things are more globally connected. There are artificially created underground areas. Then there's ones that have been there for a long time that have existed since the cataclysms on Earth, the great cataclysms like the Younger Dryas that happened over 12,000 years ago. And we see that when we go over to places like Agartha, that was called Shambhala. We see it all through the Trans-Himalayan areas, as well as the legends about Tibet. And even if you go over to Cappadocia in Turkey, if you think about the places that were very, the top of the earth was a terrible place to live, why would people go underground? Well, that hasn't changed. That's why under the airport in Denver, Colorado, there's been underground bases and places with great reserves built. And we won't get into that, but let's just say that all over the world, these sort of underground installations have been built and they exist and they're all connected. Now, in British Columbia, there's two more things I want to point out here. There was a guy that came out many years ago that alleged to be a whistleblowing super soldier. And this guy is quite a controversial figure. So, I mean, I know he's had his set of troubles, but his name was James Casbolt or Michael Prince. And he's not really in the scene anymore if you look him up. But he did some very interesting video interviews. And one of those video interviews by him, you can look up James Casbolt, Nelson, BC. And this is something that has been talked about a lot from different people. But he did this interview basically from London. Here is a guy from the UK talking about a little place in Nelson, BC, where there's an entrance to a large underground base and tunnel system that was accessed by very important people. And of course, as Richard Dolan always points out, that up in those areas of the Kootenays and whatnot, we had a lot of UFO cases documented by Vike, and there's a lot of interesting history up there. But actually, David, I'm gonna put a great secret out there today that was given to me by one of the people I talked to that has a lot of inside knowledge that he's never going to come out into these areas. I won't give the exact ideas of a location for such a place that you find here, but basically the base that's being talked about in this book that was built, that's still functional, is located up in the Rockies, the Canadian Rockies. So These places are in very remote areas, and if you read the book, you'll get a lot of clues about it, and it's absolutely incredible how much information is covered here. That in Canada, right under our noses in British Columbia, there's all kinds of incredible technology, and even in Ontario, we know that there's underground networks, and if people knew, as you and I always talk about, if people knew what was going on out there, they probably wouldn't sleep at night.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, just to even think about the fact that this stuff exists at all, or that there's any kind of underground installations, or that the military has had these, and not even just the military, you got to remember who the military works for. Okay. Everybody kind of goes, oh, it's the military industrial complex. Yeah. Yeah. Who funds it? Who built it? Who keeps it going? What's the truth behind it? I mean, all these different things are, in my opinion, just different mechanisms and different tools that are used by, you know, the most powerful people on the planet. And you got to go, well, all right. In history, we have roughly about 30,000 plus texts and documents from the ancient world, from all over the ancient world, that speak about advanced beings either visiting Earth, and it's explicit. It's not just some, you know, metaphorical reference. Like, it's very explicitly written that there's advanced beings that are visiting Earth, or that already were on Earth, and that humanity, as we are, is a new arrival to this planet, and that somebody else owns this place. Somebody else runs this place. It's like a farm. It's like, it's described as being a place that was designed or built, and then we came later. So that's a very interesting idea. And that alone really ruffles a lot of feathers in people, because it's much easier to just think, oh no, human beings, we're the top of the food chain. We're the number one show in town. And, you know, there's nothing that really competes with us. But for most people, I think the reason why this subject is the taboo subject of all taboo subjects, it's got the most ridicule around it. It's got the most propaganda around it. There's a huge circus that has been built around it to insulate it and protect it. That I think the reason why that is because it's very unnerving for the average human being to process the idea that there might be a more advanced intelligence, or that there might be systems in place to manage Earth and its resources and its inhabitants in a way that we wouldn't normally like to think about it. Even though it's interesting how we human beings do that exact same thing to all the other species and life forms on the planet. We do cloning. We do, we have farming techniques. We take resources and we use them for our benefit. What's to say that another group of people that have more advanced technology, or who are further along the timeline, haven't come and mined this place and used this place? Maybe different groups have come and gone over the thousands of years. Maybe the groups that are visiting us now are these craft that are coming in and out that don't have any rational explanation. Maybe they're a different group than some of the groups that may have just come in for scientific observation thousands of years ago. We don't know. But the fact is, there's something there that is absolutely mysterious. It's profound. And I'll tell you what, this subject is the most popular subject on the planet Earth. This idea of visitation, extraterrestrial vehicles, etc. You can go to any country in the world. I don't care if you speak the language or not. You can talk to people there, and within 5 minutes, you're going to have people coming up telling you their own personal stories. They're, you know, people that they know. It's one of the most hottest topics out there. And for me, that just shows that there's something to it. Oh, I don't know all the facts about it, but there's something to it. Can't write it off.
That's it. There is something to it. And, you know, there's a reason that people are naturally curious about this, because they know. They know on another level that something's going on. They know we haven't been given the full truth. And I think that people are ready for this information. I think they're ready to handle it. That's why they're tuned in to the Way of the Truth Warrior, because that's what you do. You talk about these things. And I think it's incredible, my friend. And, you know, the future is going to be a very different place. And we have to embrace for what kind of future we want it to be, or what we want it to look like. There's going to be a lot of things that are going to shape our future, such as gene editing, with our ability to edit our own genes, as we know that we already have the CRISPR technology, and there's great databases and everything being put together from 23andMe and other people to study the genetics on a global level. But I think one of the greatest threats that we face today, and we're doing this to ourselves, we're putting ourselves in these positions, although I do believe, like you said, you know, that we've been interacting with these people, potentially our genetics, our DNA has been tampered with many, many times. But I think artificial intelligence, as you and I have discussed before, and I know you've presented on this as well, artificial intelligence is probably one of the greatest threats that we face as we move towards this new future of humanity.
Well, I think so. I mean, I just don't think we're mature enough to handle it. We're not acting like it. I mean, God, we can't even figure out what our genders are right now, let alone trying to think about what, you know, whether or not we can have artificial intelligent nanotechnology embedded into our bodies and brains and you know, running all of our systems. And, you know, it's mind-boggling to think about it. But I wanted to ask you this question, Johnny. I know you look at a lot of this kind of stuff. What's your take on Tong DeLonge and the STARS Academy of Arts and Sciences? What do you think about that? Is that something that is a legitimate effort to try to bring this information forward? Is it a smokescreen that is funded to put out more propaganda than truth? Is it a mix of both? Do we even know? What's your take on it?
Oh, that's a very good question, man. I get a lot of different opinions from all sides about that. You know, I know Grant Cameron's had a lot to say about that in the past. You know, people out there, I know that they're absolutely against Tom DeLonge, and they say, you know, this guy is just a Trojan horse. He's out there putting out this information to dissuade us or distract us. But you know what? I have to look at all these things as pieces to the puzzle. I think a lot of us, we get caught up in, and I guess maybe I can say that I've done this before, like following one thing down a rabbit hole really far and then seeing where it goes. I think what we have to do is stay very objective and say, okay, what are we learning from this Pentagon study over here? Put the piece of the puzzle here. What are we learning over from what Dr. Stephen Greer says over here? What are we learning from what David Whitehead or Johnny Enoch or Richard Dolan says over here? All of us have a piece of the puzzle, and there's going to be stuff that we hear from some sources that we don't agree on, or there's been stuff that we've been allowed to have. For example, that Zachariah Sitchin gave us a lot of incredible information and insights that he had, that it's, from what I've been told, Jordan Maxwell's told me this, that Zachariah Sitchin was, he said privately that the information that he had put out about the Anunnaki, for example, was given to him by what he would say were the Anunnaki contacting him. But there was stuff that also that was held back, that he had, that he couldn't release, that sometimes there's information that we're not allowed to have there that has to be slightly changed. There's people in this community, David, as you know, that are risking their lives to put out information. And I'm not just saying that the people that are saying that for attention, because sometimes people say that, you know, they put on this big theatrical dramatic show and they say, oh my God, this is, you know, this information is just crazy. You know, I'm going to, they do that for marketing purposes, but no, legitimately there is information out there that people have to sometimes release in speculation, or they have to release parts of it, or they have to change a few details, and then you have to do your homework. And a good example of that is what I talked about today. This man basically was releasing this material towards the end of his life, and he was putting it out there in a way that he was obscuring some of the data points about where it was. So there's that kind of stuff out there where I think we see, and I think Tom DeLonge could be one of those cases, a legitimate effort that's a mixture.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because we can't ever for one second forget about the fact that there's professional jealousies, there's competing ideologies, and that people, I mean, just look at what happened to the field of science, for crying out loud. Look at what happens to every field. I mean, I'm a martial artist. It happens in the martial art world. Some guy comes up with a new idea. He's like, hey, let's try doing it like this. And then he gets this huge following of people and it's successful. But then, of course, all the other people that are still doing it in the old way or have their own way, they're going to go and try to snipe that person down, because it obviously threatens their position, right? So we're in a position where we're trying to deal with bias. We're trying to deal with people's, you know, petty infighting and all these different things. So like someone like Zachariah Sitchin, you know, even if everything he put out wasn't academically perfect, the story that he's recounting, when people get in and start nitpicking all the details of all the different things, the story that he is recounting is a universal story. And there's so many different cultures that discuss these types of things happening. And you can't just look at history and all the stuff coming out of these various esoteric scriptures and texts purely as some sitting around the campfire, metaphorical, very advanced type of, we're just trying to relate to the planet. So we're going to create all these different weird fairy tales. And you can't just look at it like that. I mean, there's that element, but you can't just look at it like that. So when Zachariah Sitchin comes out, and not only is he blowing out of the water a lot of the people in the field, because his research is contradicting some of what they would say, He's also going up against mainstream science, which is not interested in anything that they can't look at under a microscope. And they professionally assassinate people all the time. And then he's going up against mainstream religious dogma and ideas because it's threatening all of that, even though it's funny that all these holy books and ancient texts are actually, if you put it in the right context, they're actually telling you this story. Once you remove all the fluff and the priestcraft. But obviously somebody like that is going to come out as a threat to everybody. And then you get, you know, and then now in modern days, you have these other people coming out, people that are claiming to be whistleblowers. And it's impossible to just, it's impossible to know for sure, ultimately, you know, if someone like Tom DeLonge is coming out and if he means well, and if he, I mean, I think he means well. I think some of the information they're bringing out is just confirming other information that has come out for the last 60 years. I don't think it's really anything new, although I'd have to look into it more. But I just, I look at this field, and you've talked to these people, you've been to these conferences. It is quite an environment to get into. Let me just put it like that lightly. Like, I almost walked away from ufology completely because of some of my experiences with people in this field. Other people in this field have inspired me to stick around. But the amount of infighting, the amount of backtalking, backstabbing, the amount of fraud, the amount of lies, the amount of people just trying to get attention, like you say, it's polluted with that. But I have a very interesting idea about this. And that is that the truth messes people up. The truth can, it can, obviously it's an enlightening tool, but enlightenment is not a pretty thing like everybody thinks it is. It's actually a very hard thing to do because it means you have to let go of so many of your preconceived notions about yourself and the world. So when you get truth, or you get even a sliver of it, it creates insanity in people that are, it can drive people crazy because we're not used to getting the truth. We're not even raised in the school system to appreciate what the truth is. And the truth can scare you. It's not always just ponies and rainbows. The truth can be very, very hard to confront. So I think it drives people crazy. And that's why when you see these subjects and it's surrounded by all this noise and fighting and all this, you got to go, well, I'm not just going to throw the whole baby out with the bathwater. Maybe there's actually something at the bottom of all that craziness that's actually true. And that's why it's surrounded by all that craziness.
That's exactly right, David. And, you know, there's so much dissonance out there. There's so, like, a cognitive dissonance that people have where they're confused because they're getting information from two sides. We're always told, you know, hey, aliens aren't real. There's no such thing as UFOs, yet the Pentagon is announcing giant budgets and the fact that they're capturing things and they don't know what they are, you know, capturing things on film. We're hearing things like different reports that come out, our news reports, where we're being told all the time that, hey, you guys are crazy. You're part of the fringe if you believe in this. And then if you go on the FBI's own website, you get stuff like the Guy Hotel briefing. You get things like on the CIA's website and through the Freedom of Information Act that we found out they've been studying things like magic. They've been studying esoteric sciences the whole time. So I think the future is that we're going to look at religion. We're going to look at many of these things like a science that have been there. But, you know, before we leave the topic of underground bases and whatnot, one thing I would want to bring up, I'm talking about secrecy that actually goes beyond our governments, beyond our militaries, and even bridges into to be alleged to be involved with secret societies, would be stuff like, if people are familiar with the work of Peter Moon out there, he did a book with Radu Sinemar. This is Transylvanian Sunrise. And this book documents that up in the Busigi Mountains, up in Transylvania, which used to be, of course, before it was Romania, was a part of the ancient Hungarian or Austrian-Hungarian Empire. There's underground passageways, by the way, underground all underneath Hungary. We're in Budapest. That's where one of the major underwater reservoirs is. And that's a little clue to why all the major European companies are located there. Mm-hmm. And we can get into that another time. But one of the interesting things is that if you look over in Transylvania up in the mountains, there is on the side of the mountain the head of a sphinx. And it's been alleged that there was a tunnel discovered that went all the way to Egypt underneath this tunnel. There was another tunnel that went into an ancient holographic library. And this holographic library has been protected. I've been told by somebody who tells me they were there that that's actually, it's been moved. It's not there anymore. But there's even another entrance that went even further down into the earth. And these areas, if you go to visit it, and I'm going to be visiting in there in a few months, I'm going to take some video cameras up there. Really? After nice. We're done in Egypt, I'm going to go check it out. I've been told it's guarded by foreign intelligence agencies. And if you hike up to these areas, so I'm about to see what's there in that area. So hopefully you talk to me after, but anyways, well, I hope I return from that, but up over in looking at, it's crazy. These different places that you hear about, it's been said that this was so well protected. Radu Sinemar was talking about the secret society groups that were protecting this and how far it went even politically to protect these sorts of sites and technology. And you know what I've been told, David, is that there's been all kinds of technology even suppressed in Egypt. That has been found not only under the Giza Plateau, beyond the Osirian shafts and into the eastern areas of the chamber of the pyramid that they're excavating right now. But there's been technology that you can biokinetically interface with sorts of ancient technologies that will interface with your body and bring all sorts of sounds and messages, like those, that story of the crystal skulls. And Nick Nocerini, I told you about the last time you and I sat down for a video interview. Now, what's really interesting about that is I was talking to my friend Muhammad Ibrahim, and he said that as far as Muslims believe that in Mecca, in the city of Mecca, or the great site of Mecca for them in Saudi Arabia, that they believe in these ancient stone technologies already that can interface with us and change, because they said, from their perspective, it's not that far off to believe this sort of thing, because the stone of Mecca was originally in their text supposed to be white, and they believe it turned black due to the sins of humanity, that it will once again change color at a certain point of consciousness, so that there is a type of interfacing on these ancient crystals and stone technology, which could go far back into very ancient civilizations. So these sort of things are interesting to think about.
Oh, yeah. And as you're talking about that, this is the black stone in Mecca. A lot of people think it's a meteorite and all that kind of stuff. But a lot of people don't know, when you get into looking into groups like the Knights Templar and some of these secret Masonic orders, you got to remember the history of the Knights Templar. OK, so you have the surface history that you were told about, how, you know, Friday the 13th, the church was fed up with the Templars, you know, and so they went and they assassinated a bunch of them and disbanded them and outlawed them and all this kind of stuff. And so then Templars went underground and set up little conclaves everywhere. And Michael Tessarian and I have covered the backstory of that, where the Templars were not just these knights walking around with armor and doing battle. Those were the military, that's the military wing. But the actual power behind that group was the monastic wing of the Templars, which was the Cistercian monks. And when you look into their history and their orders and what they believed, we're talking about a lot of the birth of these secret societies coming out from these various groups that were taking information from the ancient world and then, you know, learning about it. And you think of the Templars going in the Crusades. They went where? They went to the Middle East, where you actually are getting a lot of these Sumerian stories and legends. And there was actually a Templar order called the Order of the Black Stone that a lot of people don't know about. And I find that very interesting, that the group, the Knights Templars, have this Order of the Black Stone. And now in Mecca, you have this black stone that is the Kaaba stone that they do, you know, revolutions around and all this kind of stuff. And that they were talking about some of this stone, the lost stones, the lost grail, the holy grails, and all these kind of things. Were they looking for technology? Were they looking for advanced knowledge? Were they looking for the secrets of the planet Earth? I think absolutely they were. And they, there's also the Benben stone phenomena that we've covered with Ralph Ellis. If you want to go and check him out, just put in YouTube, Ralph Ellis Benben stone. Go look at that. That's a very interesting story. And how many of the royal families actually put some of these stones, or at least even fakes of those stones, to represent it in even the, say, like things like the throne that the Queen of England sits on when she gets coronated, or, you know, into some of the symbolism that they use. That was also used by, you know, the Nazis and some of these other interesting or things that have cropped up in history. So there's a really interesting story when it comes to secret societies, their influence on history, their influence on what's really been going on behind the scenes. And when you read their literature, the literature that we do have access to, they believe in this stuff, guys. The most powerful people on the planet ever, the most wealthy people on the planet ever. The people that really run the show, not the government, not the bankers, those are all employees of these people. They've inherited it from people that had wealth and knowledge that you can't even calculate. And those people believed in this kind of stuff, and they were seeking it actively. I mean, looking at the Nazi program, the whole point was they were trying to go and seek out the story of what happened in the Tibetan mountains, what happens, what's going on in Antarctica, you know, all these esoteric, it was from Himmler, actually, more Himmler than Hitler, but Himmler was into all these esoteric sciences. And they were researching the history of Atlantis and the Aryan races and all this kind of stuff. And then the Nazi party later corrupted it and tried to use it for conquest and for power. But what I'm trying to say here is that there's this surface layer of history and the surface layer of these subjects, and then there's the esoteric or subtextual layer of this that a lot of people aren't aware of, but you can actually get information on. So, you know, it's not as easy as just looking in some history book that you got at school or online or whatever and going, oh, no, you guys are wrong because of this. No, you got to look at the real stuff. Like I know, like Michael, for example, and I know Jordan, too. They have like, he's got so many books. You've got libraries of books that you can't even get in print anymore. I even have certain collections of books that you just can't get anymore. I'm sure you do too, Johnny, that there's information that has been sort of blocked or lost in history. And that's not a new thing. I mean, if you go back to all the burnings of these libraries and the fact that we know the Vatican has all these vaults of storage of all this information hidden away somewhere, and God knows what else is going on. To say that there's no mystery, to say that there's no secret to be explored, and that there's nothing to any of this, I think is more of an insane position than it is to say that there is something to it.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think it's incredible what you and the great Michael Tazarian have done to really talk about these ancient histories. And can I just say that that man he's a genius. I mean, not only is he articulate and speaking with an incredible vocabulary, but when he breaks down history, he just doesn't go into the microcosmic, the macrocosmic. I mean, he breaks down all the intricate details into like a giant map that you never knew existed. It's unbelievable. It just shatters your mind after you're done listening to it. So the two of you guys presenting it is amazing. But I want to say with Ralph Ellis talking about the Benben Stone, it's absolutely amazing because we can link the Benben Stone over to Big Ben. And when you're over in Westminster, again, you and I had a good laugh about this a little while ago. We were talking about the Benben Stone and the connection over to On-Un Heliopolis, that in Westminster, there is something known as Cleopatra's Needle, which is an obelisk that's been brought there from Heliopolis, and it's the same kind of needles that exist over in Paris and New York, which is really fascinating. And actually, the Eiffel Tower also acts as an obelisk, and I believe these are like acupuncture needles on the ley lines of the planet and bringing out great amounts of energy. There's a whole other ancient science there that the Masters of Enlightenment understood, and it's sending a very clear and direct message. Like you said, it's like saying, hey, these are our cities, this is where the light of the ancients sits, and this is sort of a beacon to let you know that you know, there is a higher purpose to all of this. Anyhow, back over into what you were saying with the Templars and everything, I think it's absolutely magnificent that these sort of this sort of ancient knowledge has existed, because one of the other people that you were talking to at the last conference that I had a good time talking to him as well, I was actually his ride back to the airport, is Daniel Sheehan. And one of the things that Daniel Sheehan and I talked about, and as you know, he is a Jesuit-trained constitutional lawyer, one of the main forces behind the legal side of the disclosure project that Dr. Stephen Greer put back in 2001, put on. One of the things Daniel Sheehan did tell me in our discussions is that at the Vatican, there are records of extraterrestrial encounters, and there's all sorts of things I've also been told that exist there, all kinds of other kinds of catacombs and outclaves, and there's places all over the world where there are libraries and knowledge like that stored that the public is not privy to. But one day we're going to get there where this stuff is going to be public knowledge.
Yeah, I think actually the whole 2012 thing, I agree with Michael on his assessment here. He was one of the guys that was saying it's not just going to be this instant jump, like light speed evolution into some utopian future. It was going to just talk about this age that we're in, the age of revealing, as he called it, where it was kicking it off. And not everything we were going to learn was going to be fun and pretty. A lot of it was going to be learning about a lot of the darker parts of history that have held these secrets and why they've been held and all that. And I see now that more and more, as we keep going, these subjects and many subjects are now just out there, and it's we're discussing it now. It's not even a debate as much anymore as to whether or not this stuff exists or is real. It's more so was it valid for them to hide this for as long as they did? Was it, this was the debate happening, I think, behind the scenes when you listen to some of the whistleblower testimony that military people coming forward that have said, well, the reason they didn't disclose any of this stuff, like any of these visitations or what was really gone with UFOs or any of that, was because they genuinely believed that it would completely disrupt and uproot all of our society and all the institutions. It would uproot science, exactly. It would uproot religion, it would disturb people too much, it would devolve into a whole level of disorder that we wouldn't be able to handle. And then also taking into consideration that it would completely dethrone the oil cartels that run the world, basically, and their grip on energy, controlling energy. And you kind of go, well, obviously that's too big of a secret to give up. They're not willing to give that up. These organizations, these Templars, these Vaticans, all these things, they didn't work for thousands of years to gain control over this planet just to give it away once some big secret comes out. So I think there's many reasons why they are trying to hold it back. Maybe some of them mean well, that are just like, look, we just honestly don't think you can handle it. Maybe there's something to this that is so absolutely mind-blowing that maybe we genuinely couldn't handle it. I don't know. But I feel like this is a time where we have to face the truth, even if it's hard, even if it does uproot everything that we know. It's important to go through that, because otherwise we're operating on a false premise and we're not going to get anywhere in terms of moving in the right direction as a species or as a society. So I personally advocate for the truth to be given, even if we just get part of it for now and you can drip feed it slowly, however you want to do it. You got to start talking about the truth, because you can't hide it anymore. You can't hide it anymore. It's out there. There's too much out there. There's too many people that have come out and exposed it. There's too much evidence to go through to just sit there and dismiss it anymore. So you can't hide it anymore. And I think that we see now the news media is reporting it much more seriously than they used to. We see these ATIP programs and we see all these things. And just a quick comment about the ATIP program. Think about that. You had Project Blue Book, which was the Air Force and the military's attempt at trying to research UFOs. And they've had many of these, but let's just look at Blue Book. And then they closed the book and they said, yep, there's nothing to see here. Yeah, there's, still a small percentage of stuff we can't explain, but there's nothing to see here. And we're not going to invest any more time investigating this. And then over the years, since Blue Book, we've had how many different exposures of the fact that, no, they're still researching this using your tax dollars. They're still researching this. And then ATIP was just yet another investigation where the Pentagon put all these millions of dollars towards researching this phenomenon. So, and we know other governments of the world have done the same thing. I'd love to know what China knows. I'd love to know what Russia knows. I'd love to know what Iran knows. We've got so many things that are involved here. This question could destabilize all the geopolitical things happening right now, but in a way, maybe that would be a good thing,
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that going back to the point that you made earlier about there being an esoteric side of things, an esoteric history and esoteric science there, and then there's the exoteric, what everybody sees, it's sort of a common knowledge. When you start looking at these things, it becomes, the knowledge of the researcher, that at the highest levels of the world's governments, at the highest level of thinking, that there is a unison, a cooperation. But, we could say that a lot of what we think is very important, a lot of our social issues, a lot of the structure from day-to-day things are very much a distraction, that we're looking at things on a level that is very infuriating and frustrating for us sometimes, because we have all sorts of cultural indoctrination and things that come at us from a psychological point of view. But in other ways, we're looked at as rats to kind of be put into an experiment, that we're being thrown towards this idea to capitulate our sovereignty and to look into working like a hive mind. And I think that's, not the direction I would like to see going. I'd like to see humanity working towards a higher level of consciousness and looking from a psychological and a spiritual perspective of improvement. But who knows where we're going to take it? And I think that's why everybody watching this, everyone watching your show today, we can become like the great custodians of the earth and the great custodians of our own content, our conduct, and shift directions.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I wouldn't hold our breath on trying to change the world, but you can change your world. And by changing your world, yes, you're contributing to the change of the world. if we just go out there and try to force feed everybody and make everybody look at this the way we look at it, that's not what we're trying to do here, guys. I don't have the final word on any of this. I don't claim to be an expert in this. I'm just like you, Johnny. I'm somebody that's curious about it. I'm interested in it. I'm open-minded to it. I've seen enough to know that where there's smoke, there's fire. And I'm getting a little bit sick of the fact that still to this day, after the amount of evidence and information that has been put forward in a very eloquent manner, by the way, we're not just talking about crazy people, a bunch of Budweiser wearing, you know, loonies talking about this stuff. We're talking academic level people, astronauts, military personnel, former prime ministers, former presidents, from every sector of society. We're talking about how many countless documentaries and films and investigations and journalists like, you know, George Knapp. I mean, before he started getting into ufology and coast to coast, the guy was an award-winning journalist, one of the last few that actually did proper journalistic research. The journalists of today, they just memorize teleprompters. They don't do journalistic work anymore. It's a thing of the past.
Right.
And those are the first ones to get up and try to slam these people who have dedicated their lives to these subjects. So, I mean, there's a very, very interesting thing. And you know what? I think it's also a useful exercise. Even if you're one of those people out there that's like, ah, it's just a bunch of nonsense. Look, it's a useful exercise to look at things from a different perspective and to have theories that are going to counter the main theories that we all go by, that we were all taught, by the way. None of us came on this naturally. We were all told what to think about the world. We were trained and conditioned about what to think about the world. And when any kind of new information comes in to disrupt that, the reaction, in my opinion, should be, oh, that's interesting. Let's go and look at that before we just go, ah, bosh. I think it's just this knee-jerk reaction that we have, and it's based in fear, because fear is about we're afraid of what we don't understand. We're afraid of what we don't have control over, and we're also afraid, I think, of our status in the hierarchy of society. There's a lot of guys that have spent their lives that have tried to debunk this stuff, that have tried to talk down about it. And even if they are convinced, and I've heard behind the scenes that many of these debunkers have become convinced over the years, they don't want to professionally assassinate themselves by coming out and admitting it. But to see that that's happening, that's interesting to me. That's very interesting to me that some of the top debunkers have actually been converted to think, you know what, there's actually something to it, but they just don't want to admit it. So, you know, we have to stay skeptical, but not to become irrationally skeptical to the point where we're not able to look at new information when it comes in. And if you want to talk about an amount of like a lot of information coming out about a subject, the UFO, alien, paranormal, whatever subject you want to put that category together in, has more information coming out about it now than ever before. So it's an exciting time to be looking into it and to at least go through the exercise of contrasting that information with what we think we know about ourselves and the world.
Absolutely. And well said. You know, one of my favorite cases, David, of someone who was a debunker and a skeptic is actually the story of Philip Kraft. And you can look up his book out there. His book is called Contact Has Begun. He was an LA Times journalist who was criticizing this stuff and debunking it for something like 30 years. And then when he's about to retire, his wife leaves out of town and he says, wait a second, I'm going to just take a relaxing weekend. No wife is there. No one's going to bother me. He's a self-admitted atheist and skeptic, doesn't believe in any of this stuff. He says, I'm just going to take a nice rest and go to bed one night. What happens is that these extraterrestrials known as the Verdants show up at his room and say, hey, you're coming with us. And they take him up to their ships and show him around and say, listen, we have chosen you because you've been one of the most hard-nosed skeptics. People no longer believe the hillbilly guy out in the middle of nowhere. They want to believe somebody who has no background in this stuff whatsoever. So he starts to write about his experiences and document them with him, getting people ready for disclosure. Disclosure doesn't happen right away because 9/11 comes and it interrupts things as far as they're concerned. But this guy, he was not a very good public speaker. He didn't want to come forward at first. He was endorsed by Bob Dean, Sergeant Major Bob Dean, who I believe later in Bob Dean's accounts, he probably went to the exact same ships that Philip Kraft went to, because on Philip Kraft's experiences, he relates to the idea that they had the ability to change, to create food, like any kind of food on Earth, like using of natural materials to create it, so they could recreate meat or anything so it was identical, a replicator technology, which I believe is right around the corner for us. It already exists. They have the ability to shrink things down to the nanoscale right now. We have the ability to dematerialize waste and replicate things, and some of these technologies, as you and I have discussed, once they become available to the public, they're going to revolutionize everything from our medical to so much there to discover. But anyways, Philip Kraft, incredible story, a guy that then became criticized from all of his peers and people who respected him all those years. But it's so funny when the debunkers come back and they have to eat crow, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And you know what? I'm one of those people that values the debunkers. I'm not that person that's like, yes. Oh, you're challenging what I think I know. And it can go on the other side too, where people just start believing this crazy stuff. That's literally crazy. It's a fantasy of their mind. And we know that, but you need the debunkers. You need the people to challenge. You need the critics, but it does get a little bit frustrating when it's not just, oh, let's just go with, you know, a valid argument versus another valid argument and pit them together and figure out the truth. It can become quite, a cockfest in a way. Like, it can be quite a battle that doesn't need to happen.
Today's generation, David, today's generation, as you know, it's almost as if there's no room for debate on social, political issues, anything else. You know, you want to come in on one side, and it seems like if you're on the wrong side of the argument, that you're put into these radical categories and shut down, and it's this level of being offended by everything. I tell you, I've had to walk out of, and I'm saying this from a very upset point of view, because I love going to the movies. I love, especially comedies. I'm a huge fan of the comedy genre. And it seems like nowadays people are so offended. There's only one side of the argument that you can't even watch a comedy anymore. The comedy is so unfunny and so ridiculous and it's nothing like, you know, what you'd get from like a Monty Python, which would be totally offensive to people's today. You can't see anything without offending one side. So it's almost impossible to have a good debate.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we can kind of talk about that for a minute here, because, you know, as fun as it is to talk about all this UFOs and Area 51 stuff, you know, this is something that I've tried to distract myself from and not focus on. But then I'm sitting here watching what's happening with this, the meltdown of society. And I can't ignore it. I have to cover it on this show. I have to start covering politics. I have to start covering this stuff, because if we can't maintain our freedom of speech, if we can't maintain our freedom of association and expression and all of that, then we're not going to be able to communicate any of these advanced ideas to people, because it's going to offend everybody. And then that's going to be illegal. And we have hate speech laws. And then you just can't even talk anymore. The most recent phenomena that's been happening lately is this attack on males, men. And it's just, it's incredible to think about this, that there's just this particular view that's being pumped out. It's got billions of dollars behind it. Thank you, George Soros and other people, to try to derail and divide society so that we can't even converse about these things anymore. And I think this is actually an agenda. I don't think this is just a product of the times. I think this is an agenda. And I don't know if you saw the recent Gillette commercial. Did you see this? Did you hear about it?
I haven't seen it, but I'm guessing someone was offended because there was a man shaving on there.
No. Okay. So you'd think, right? You'd think, but now Gillette as a company just put out basically a piece of feminist propaganda. And it's really interesting to see, like, a company like Gillette, who's, I don't know, 99% of their clients are men that shave. And they basically go on this whole preachy, you know, men, you know, you have to, they're trying to re-engineer men, you know. Stop catcalling women. Stop acting masculine. Stop doing this, because you just got to grow up and you don't, you know, it was like this very preachy, talking down to men kind of thing. I have a video coming out after this one, actually, that I shared my opinion about that and all the other things that are going on in the media trying to demonize men. And then, you know, in a way, there's another thing going on to change and demonize women in a totally different way. And then the pitting of people against one race versus another race, and culture warfare, and the, you know, the globalization and all that. We know that what's been happening is going to stir the pot, but to see this consistent rollout of propaganda coming from everywhere, from just a freaking Gillette commercial to a movie to, you know, people can't even speak at universities, and comedians are getting their events canceled because something they said was apparently offensive. It's getting to a point where you can't even communicate anymore. And that, to me, is going to stifle our ability to talk about basic functionality things in our society, let alone advance things like, hey, are we alone in the universe, and has it been a cover up all these years, and what the hell is really going on? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I knew we were facing problems when Seinfeld was deemed offensive. And even millennials have gone back and said movies like American Pie are offensive. It's like everything is offensive now. I don't know. Call me old school, but I find the offensive shows like Seinfeld, which I never... I can't even imagine how that would be offensive. Jerry Seinfeld getting angry out of over a piece of marble rye. I don't know how that's offensive, but
Did you hear about Australia? Did you see in Australia how they're, so Australia is like a spearhead.
I saw that.
Okay. And I posted a clip of this. This is on their mainstream news where they're actually talking about getting rid of Thomas the Tank Engine books and other, whatever, Clifford the Big Red Dog books, because they have to re-engineer them so that they don't, gender stereotype? Are they're gendering people? They're gendering boys and girls. So they don't want boys and girls gendered. They don't want them to know their gender because that's apparently a social construct. And they're actually making these books. They're taking these books off the shelf, and they're removing movies and shows that, you know, we grew up watching, and it's because someone freaked out about it, and now it's deemed offensive. And you go, well, okay. There's a lot of things that I would find offensive. Like I find pedophile rings offensive. I find if you want to talk rape culture, let's get into that. You know, talking about secret societies and satanic cults and groups and all this kind of stuff. And you go everywhere else in the world where there's all these child sex slave rings. And I find that offensive. That's the real shit we should be talking about. Not Thomas the frickin' Tank Engine. What are you doing?
I think that, you know, people looking at all these issues, perhaps we're looking at the verge of a great awakening, that people are maybe very confused about what to go after or what
I think you're right.
What is the evil source of things. But it's kind of like, you know, I think that when you see what policing does, you know, police are realizing that to have a good communication and a good relationship with a community, that if you just go out handing out tickets for every little infraction and being overzealous with handing out speeding tickets, for example, you know, you're not going to have a good relationship with your community. So what right. A lot of police efforts I've heard are now doing is that they're no longer doing what they call shit ticketing. They're being, you know, giving more warnings and being more responsible in that sort of exchange. And what's happening is that it's creating a stronger relationship with communities, and it's opening up greater responsibility from people and communication lines. And I think if people want responsible policies and they want to look at things on a greater effort, you know, being psychologically sensitive to everyone, they gotta stop being, you know, overbearing and overzealous with that sort of thing. But speaking of cults and cult-like structures, you know, one thing you and I were talking about, the areas of where you live, actually, you live next door to what is alleged to be one of the largest satanic communities for that sort of activity in all of the world. Deep. In fact, it's been said next to Geneva, Switzerland.
Yeah, I've heard about this. And I heard about this first because when I was in Ontario, I interviewed some people that had experience with some of these satanic networks in Ontario. And there's different hierarchical levels within that. There's your just average everyday anarchist Satanist that is just, you know, run of the mill, but then there's these deep, you know, very powerful connected groups. And when I came to British Columbia, a friend of mine who doesn't really actively research it or isn't like super knowledgeable about it, but had heard stories growing up here, he started sending me links and he goes, man, I'd love to do a documentary one day on this just to see what it's all about. Cause I keep hearing about this and children disappearing and underground networks and the satanic connections in Victoria, which is close to where I live. And I was like, yeah, that's interesting. And the more I looked into it, holy crap, man, there's a lot of very, very documented information about this. I think we should absolutely do some kind of documentary if I, you know, would say so, you know, provided we don't risk our lives doing it. But geez, like, it's insane. What do you know about it, Johnny?
It's interesting because you and I briefly touched down on it recently when we were having our chat. And I actually think it would be a very interesting documentary for you to do, because there's a lot of people with a lot of stories that come out of that area. And there's a lot of famous stories that actually received international attention looking at that area of Victoria, BC. And actually, what's very interesting is that there was a book that came out. It was called Michelle Remembers. It's this book right here. And it became very popular going out into the 1980s. And the book is by Michelle Smith and Lawrence Pazder, MD. He's a medical doctor. And Michelle, who was born in the 1950s out in Victoria, if you can see a picture of her there, she came to this doctor, for looking at some clinical hypnotherapy and some regression sessions based on some memories and traumatic events that she had gone through in her life. Now, I want to point out, that her story has been greatly criticized over the years. And, you know, people have tried to pull it apart because she alleged in her memories of these experiences to have seen some sort of interdimensional beings or something come out of these strange rituals that they were doing with her from a childlike age. And there's a lot of very famous places around Victoria that she said that she was taken. One of those places, it says here in the book, it says there's a mausoleum that's located in the Victoria's Ross Bay Cemetery. There's a mausoleum there where members of the Church of Satan, it's alleged here, alleged, mind you, they performed a ritual in which they attempted unsuccessfully to give Michelle a rebirth into evil. And this is the mausoleum where they would supposedly enter in Victoria. And as it goes around, you know, there's allegations of ritualistic and sexual abuse and everything else that was going on here. Michelle, remembers, became quite famous for her story. And on top of that, there's been other investigators, and I sent you a link. There's been other investigators looking into, let's say, the Michael Dunahy case, and they said that this ritualistic behavior was linked to, in their opinion, a possible suspect connected to the case of this young missing boy named Michael Dunahy, who I remember hearing about when I was going to school. That's the Vice article. There's one other article that was sent to you, and it's an older page there, if you pull it up. It's a article that's talking about how he went missing seven streets from Easter Street. And there was a connection to the time being close to Easter Sunday, which was the exact opposite in ritualistic behavior. And the statistic was given there in that article I sent you, that they claimed that Victoria had the second highest population of practicing Satanists. And those in other occult communities, second in the world next to Geneva, Switzerland. So there it is. There's the old article that was about this. If you scroll down the first few lines, you'll start to read that, some of those statistics and some of the research there.
I'll just read that brief little thing for people. It says, was Michael Dunahy abducted by a satanic cult? Publicly, all the RCMP will say is that they have little or no concrete idea as to what happened to the four-year-old boy back in 1991 when he vanished without a trace from the Blanchard Park in Victoria, BC, while his parents played a game of touch football nearby. And it just keeps going on about these witnesses and all that kind of stuff. But there's, dude, the amount of these types of cases is quite shocking. I mean, think about the monumental amount of children that go missing every single year around the world. Think about all the stories that we've heard from people within even the White House and from, you know, all over, and in Canadian politics as well. There's a huge network of this kind of stuff going on. And it's not a new phenomena. This is as ancient as human beings. There's these groups of people that get into this twisted, dark, evil shit. And you start to wonder what's behind their motivation to even partake in that kind of stuff. And you just, once you get into all the occult and esoteric literature and you realize how many of the world's most powerful and famous people have partaken in these kinds of rituals, whether you believe in it or not, they believe in it. And then the stuff that they do, and you put it all together. It is a dark and fascinating mystery that I think needs some light shed on it so that we can put a stop to this stuff, because this is the darkest shit you're ever going to hear about. It's incredible.
Absolutely, David. And, you know, I put out a small video about the architectonics in Victoria, because Victoria has always been one of my favorite cities to visit. I love visiting Victoria. Yeah, and sure. I'm a book nerd, just like you. I know you read a lot of books, my friend. And so for me, I'm the same way. I like to go, whenever I go to a city, I like to go to old bookstores. I like to cruise around, especially old occult metaphysical books. I'm always looking for old stuff on, like, near-death experiences and stuff I've never read, or old esoteric books. So that's one of my fun things, is to spend a whole day trying out good coffee and food and rare bookstores. Well, Victoria is one of those cities where there's just endless occult bookstores. There's a giant occult magic community there. So I did this video called The Occult Secrets of Victoria, talking about the architectonics hidden, like the triptych arch and the Parliament buildings and stuff like that. And I touched down a little bit about this. I didn't go in depth in it, but what was very interesting is that when I put out that, it was just like, I don't know, a 10-minute video or whatever I did. When I put this out, I was commented by countless comments from people, because I've always been a big fan of all the ghostly walks and hauntings in that area, but countless people contacted me to tell me about stories about ritualistic behavior out there, the underground networks and cave systems, of witnessing people doing dark things. And I myself once saw something rather dark out there that made me believe it's all true that really? I mentioned there. But I think it is a very, that whole island, from what we were talking about earlier, from extraterrestrial stuff, from underground bases to occult activity to great amounts of energy. Maybe that's why you're there, because the energy is so great. It needs to, the truth warrior needs to balance it out. But the it's an amazing, beautiful place. It really is.
Well, there's this old saying that all light casts a shadow. All right. And when you think about that, you know, everywhere, I think this is a very powerful place. I was speaking about this with a friend of mine who I've had on the show before. His name's Kamal Evans, and he's grown up here on Salt Spring and around, and he's just a wealth of knowledge about this place. And he was talking about the crystalline nature of the rock formations here and what's under this island, and what the whole history of this island, and why everything grows like crazy here. Like, you just can't even get away from it. I got to cut my grass like every week. It just, everything grows here, no matter what the weather does. It's just if you go into a forest here and it's just, everything's thriving and like throbbing, like it's crazy here, right? For that. And so there's an energy that the energy here is incredible. And what I've heard from a lot of people is these different points on the planet where there is a tremendous amount of energy, there's also a lot of very evil, dark stuff that happens there. It's as if it's almost, if you think of it on a level of bacteria, where does bacteria collect? It collects in places that you're trying to keep clean. It collects there. And if you don't clean it and maintain it, that bacteria will eventually eat and destroy that thing. It's almost like there's a part of that that is in human consciousness itself, or that is in on the planet for some reason. And we can debate what the origin of that is. But if you just see it as another system of life, that wherever there's some goodness, there's evil. Wherever there's light, there's darkness. Wherever you see the yin-yang balance everywhere. And this place is no exception. So expect that where there's some of the best things, it's also going to be competing with some of the darkest things you could ever hear about. And it's on two ends of that extreme spectrum, you know?
Yeah, you know, one other interesting story from Vancouver Island I heard recently is Sebastian Martin, who actually lives out in those areas. He lives over by Duncan. He was actually talking to someone on our recent investigation that we were doing into these particular underground base networks that connect under the oceanic areas. They connect over even up into Mount Baker and to Mount Adams. It's an incredible connection when we look at it from a geological perspective. He was talking to a fellow in the area who is a respected business person. And this guy was looking up on the dark web for information and documents pertaining to chemtrails over Vancouver Island and in these areas of going into the bases and everything. And what he was saying, that this absolutely scared him. And we're going to try to get some video. We might have to blur his identity. We're going to get some video for this upcoming documentary that we've been doing on these underground bases. But he was saying that after he started looking, he found documents pertaining to these chemtrails in the Vancouver Island area that said that they were used to cover up the coming and going of experimental or other types of aircraft, which almost sounded like UFOs. And he said after he had been looking, I don't know if this was coincidental, I don't think so, the next day on his vehicle, there was an American $1 bill that was put in into the windshield wiper of his vehicle that said something like, stop looking. Or it was very much an admonishment or a warning that he needs to stop looking into these particular areas. And he said there was just all kinds of strange mysteries and everything that points over to Vancouver Island. So again, you seem to be living in the center of all the most interesting activity there, David.
Wow. Blows my mind. You have to put me in contact with some of these people. I mean, I think we should do more on this. I'd love to go up to Clearwater with you and start interviewing people there or talking to people. We got to get out on the street, man. I mean, it's enough for us to sit here and talk about it, but I'd like to be able to prove some of this stuff and do some more videos. And it seems like it's the time to do it, even with all the censorship and all that kind of stuff. It seems the more they're trying to censor any kind of conversation or any kind of alternative information, the more people want to hear about it. So keep censoring us, guys. You're doing a great job with the PR for us. We don't have to, that's amazing. Keep it up. The more we do it, the better it is. And the minute what I find interesting about this, the minute, like, we're going to get a crap ton of comments on this. My email is going to blow up from this episode. Your email is going to blow up from this episode. Watch it. Mark my words. And people are going to be contacting us to try to tell us their stories and tell us what they know and talk about these connections. It's incredible. The last time I did a show like this, I couldn't even get back to everybody. That's how inundated I was. I once did an experimental video years back where I was like, hey guys, send me your crazy stories, send me your UFO or ghost or paranormal or any kind of weird stuff you've seen, or if you're inside on a company somewhere, what kind of exchanges and meetings you've been to, send me some of your weird stuff. Dude, I didn't know if anybody would contact me. I think I still haven't opened up all the emails from that. And it was like 7 years ago I did that video. So what that to me is interesting, that this is the water cooler conversation that everybody's having. People like us are the silent majority. We're talking about this, even though when you hear all the big podcasters and the big media people and the big, you know, the big news outlets that are just poo-pooing all this kind of stuff, don't forget that this is the most popular stuff out there. And that to me indicates that there's at least a level of interest in it. And even though you got to filter through all the stories that are probably bullshit, probably most of the stuff you're going to hear is bullshit, there's that 10%. That percentage that's just is unexplainable, and there's something to it. And then you look at the evidence and you're like, wow, there's definitely something to be looked at. So I hope we can do more of these shows, Johnny. I'd love to have you on this show on the regs. And I definitely would like to follow up with you when you get back from Egypt. Maybe you could close out with letting people know about the tour you're doing in Egypt, the work you've done there, the secret access you have access to there, whatever you can say about it. And then some of the projects you've got in the pipeline, my friend.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on your show, David. It's a pleasure to be on here with you. And I love what you're doing, man. It would be a great honor to return at any time on the Way of the Truth Warrior. And so for what we're doing up here in Egypt, yeah, man, what we're doing up in Egypt, coming up at the end of March, I'm going to Egypt with my friend and Egyptologist Mark, marked on the calendar here, I guess on March 26th, I think it is, through April 8th, and you can still get a spot on our tour with a discount at ancientmysterytours.com. We're going here with Muhammad Ibrahim into the very depth of the mysteries. We're going in to investigate the various pyramids. We have very exclusive access to go into all these places to have private access at night, and we're going to be going up into the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid to the we're going to be going in over into even the subterranean chambers. We're going to be meditating and on all sorts of new concepts and ideas to take our consciousness to a next level. But most of all, we're going to be exploring a lot of the places that people don't normally go to. We're going to go into the Serapeum. We're going to be going over to Saqqara, where we get the word sacred from. And when you go to Egypt, David, as you know, that this is where we get all of our ancient, religions, a lot of the lexicon in our own language, a lot of our terminology that we get from this incredible place where all the mysteries originate from or were trickled down into. And you really get like a transference of knowledge just coming into these great places. So I welcome everyone to join us into this place. And at the end of the year, we're going to be heading over to Peru and Bolivia with my dear friend Brian Forrester, and that's at hiddenincatours.com. I don't think we have any
spaces
left.
I need to get in touch with Brian. I don't know if you can send me his contact. I'd love to have him.
Definitely.
On the show. Yeah, great.
I Brian would love to come on your show, I'm sure of it, to share all his knowledge. So yeah, definitely put you guys in touch with each other right after this. But for certain, if anyone wants to join any tours to Peru, hiddenincatours.com. I think our tour is full. We have a waiting list right now. We filled up the third. It's funny because we filled up the 35 people on the tour before, and we extended it from 25 to 35. Then we filled that up for the 2019 November tour. We filled that up in November 2018. It was all booked up. So people really want to find out what's going on with these elongated skulls. But if people want to find my work, they can go to www.metaphysicalsource.com. They can find me on Twitter at Johnny Enoch or Instagram at Esoteric Johnny.
Oh, definitely go check this man out, my friends. Johnny, you'll blow your mind.
Thank you, David.
He's got some very interesting, and I just love your energy, man. I've met you, I've spoken to you many times, I've watched your videos, we've had many great discussions, and I know you are a sincere person. You love this just as much as I do. The energy that you bring to it is fantastic. You're not these dull, boring type
Thank you,
of
brother.
Person. So you're going to inspire a lot of people. And I want to encourage you to keep doing this, regardless of what any of this, the flack you're going to get for doing it might be. It's important work, man. I would love to do it. I should also maybe get you up over on Unslaved sometime so you can get in there with Michael and have some conversations with him. I'd even love to get in touch with Jordan again and see if he's still out and about and doing public interviews and pick his brain a little bit. I had him on a couple times about 5 or 6 years ago now. And, you know, he's just a person that in an American context has brought so much information forward about this stuff and inspired many people in that regard. And I know everybody's got their opinion on all these researchers, but you really have to look at these subjects eclectically. Like you said in the beginning, Johnny, you have to look at the pros, the cons, everybody has a puzzle piece to offer you. And this is an exploration of the truth. So you're going to have to look at it all. You can't be tunnel visioned. You can't form all these biases that are going to prevent you from looking at the information that will enlighten you. So, you know, thank you, Johnny, for continuing to do this work. I wish you the best of luck on your tours. I definitely want to connect with you when you get back, and we'll have to work on some more of these things together in the future, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you, brother. I appreciate the kind words. And like I said, all the same things can be said about you. I love your energy. I love what you're doing here. And we're definitely coming back to do more shows. I love that idea.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Johnny Enoch, ladies and gentlemen, go look him up. Thanks for joining us for this very fascinating chat. We could sit here and talk all day. We'll have you back in the near future. And I'll see all of you back here for another edition of The Way of the Truth Warrior very soon. Peace out, guys. Cheers.